It's small, it's brown, it's made of leather. It has my initials on it. I believe that's it.
Don't forget, the grandparents are coming this afternoon.
Are we still having dinner with the Rice Checks?
Riz Checks, 8 o'clock at the club. Oh, and you better learn their names. As of tomorrow, they're family.
That's a lovely thought.
What do they want?
Sex.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 401, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, the Coverthon edition. That's right. We're live, and we'll get to that all in a second and explain what that means and how you can be rad while we're doing this live today. In the meantime, I'm Scott Johnson, joined by Brian, named after a duck's Dork Dunaway.
Dork's Duck Dunaway. Oh, hi, Film Sack.
Yeah.
Chronologically, you're episode 401 today. Physically, you're still 400. No, I didn't expect us to wake up transformed. I just thought that turning 401 is so major that we'd wake up with an improved mental state that would show on our faces. All that shows is the fact that we are all out of coffee and 9 a.m. liquor. We're all out. Also, who plans a 401st episode on Black Friday during Coverthon? I mean, come on! How are we supposed to compete with that? Just look at Ibbot. He's online shopping right now and sporting at least a negative 4 inches of bod. That's a hair reference, Scott. Took me about 15 minutes to reel that one in.
Yeah.
Oh, she's talking about hair volume. That kind of bod. Anywho, our listeners are probably pissed that we haven't let them wish us a happy 401 yet. Of course, they probably effing forgot. Too busy down at the Walmart digging through DVD bins, throwing elbows and kicking shins, fighting for the last copy of Pretty in Pink. Which is where I'll be in about half an hour, in the DVD bin, not being Pretty in Pink. Though I think I can pull it off.
Yeah.
All right. Happy Coverthon.
Nicely done. It's in keeping with your usual awesomeness. Also with us, Randy, still wishing Billy Bird was with us, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Morning.
Randy.
Never tell you boys about the time I owned a rich folks with teenagers custodial services company?
No.
Not even once.
Yep. True story. Rich folks, kids, make huge messes, and we come along and clean up. It seems pretty straightforward, but it ain't. It's got so many tricks to it. Like, I'll just tell you one. Did you know that girls are always getting things caught in doors? It's true, I tell you. And it's funny. so funny. Oh, you know what else is funny? Inebriated people. In real life, you see inebriated people all the time, and you just laugh and laugh. And even when you've already laughed at the first three inebriated people you saw today, here comes a bride, another one, and you just laugh at that one, too. Yeah!
Nice. Nice. We got out his... I love when Randy brings his hick with him. I like it.
I do, too.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. No offense to any actual hicks.
Reminds me of home.
Yeah, exactly.
You got the hick and the... Did I ever tell you about the time? It's like it's a twofer.
It is a twofer, and it feels good. Speaking of which, finally, but never withstanding, that's not a word. That's not a way of saying things. Anyway, it's Brian, not enough subplot with the jockstrap head kids Ibbot.
Oh, so true. By the way, Dunaway, I feel like if Robin Williams were still with us, he'd go, "Oh, that guy pulls him right out of left field. Crazy all over the place." Anyway. All right, so it's certainly a little racist to play the gong sound every time Lung Duk Dong appears on screen or gets his name mentioned. But, you know, maybe it wouldn't be so bad if it didn't just limit it to Asian racism and not use them throughout the film. For example, how about if we heard this sound every time a Latin American appeared on screen?
Aye, aye, aye.
Or this one every time a Canadian actor appeared on screen.
Good day, eh?
Or how about this one every time a millennial white woman said a line?
Take a selfie.
Can we keep going?
Hold on a second. I want to keep going. I want my own.
Every time someone from Brooklyn is on the screen and makes Tina just keep going.
Oh my gosh. I want my very own flesh and blood soundboard. That's an amazing idea. Well done, Tina Ibbett. Real quick, we should mention this before we get to 16 Candles, which is our film, and we're happy to be doing that. But as yearly tradition dictates, we come out here and do a live episode of the show on the annual Coverthon by the one and only Brian Ibbett, an event that spans many, many hours and is designed to collect money for research in the area of Alzheimer's disease. And it's a fantastic cause, a great place to stick a little money if you got some. And Ibbett, anything else you want to say about it before we get moving?
No, I mean, just go to coverville.com, go to the top of the page. There's a donate link right there. Click that donate link. And I think we're trying to figure out if the QR code is working. So for right now, use the donate link. And now Tina's going to tell you where she's about to disappear to, what she's going to go do.
Oh, fun. All right, where are you going, Tina?
Tina, what are you
going
to go do?
I'm going to go pick up poop in the backyard.
Nice. Pick up poop. Nice. It truly is Brown Friday. Right. Fantastic.
18 hours of poop scooping.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that'll learn you some.
Since Brian is here, I know she's not talking about him.
No. Nope.
Passed out drunk in the backyard.
No. Yes, well, who do you think made the mess in the backyard?
Right.
We
know
what's
up. Hilarious.
We know what's real.
Bad things happen. Can I ask one question before we start, though?
Yeah.
Is there any contingent, if someone is listening later to this, not live, that they can go back and still donate? Is there any yearly thing
they
can
still
do?
Can. Yes. I keep this link up for about a week after Coverthon. So as long as it's before November 30th, then they can continue to donate. Because the gift matching thing is at the beginning of December. So
yeah, a lot of people will be listening this Monday probably.
Yeah,
so that'd be great.
Exactly. Yeah, I always try and time it so that the when we do the Alzheimer's donation, there's a gift matching that doubles it, basically. So.
Nice. Excellent. Very nice. It's a great cause. So go and throw a little cash at it. And if you're not there for the live stuff right now and listening to us now, nothing's stopping you from going in later after you've heard the podcast. So go check it out, coverville.com for details. Exactly. All right, let's get to it. It is 16 Candles, the directorial debut of John Hughes, not his first written job. There are many before this, but his first directing and writing of any film. You got your Molly Ringwald and your Anthony Michael Hall and your everyone else. We'll get to all of them.
And your everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, they really were the two John Hughes salt and pepper shakers, right? I mean, he used them throughout most of his films. There were a couple films that didn't feature either of them.
Yeah,
but,
of course. Yeah.
You fools.
But it's a good point. But also, you know, this movie's got the Cusack siblings in it. They're not necessarily known for Hughes films, but they ran kind of parallel in other movies that were comparable, Say Anything and you know, Better Off Dead and all that sort of stuff. We're all very Hughes-like and kind of from the same era.
It's funny. I mean, Anthony Michael Hall was such a staple that for like a split second, and mind you, just a split second, I was thinking that Edward Scissorhands was a John Hughes film and not a Tim Burton film.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm. That would be fun. Mm.
Yeah.
I might have preferred it, if I'm being
honest. This is Molly Ringwald's first true, we've seen her performance, right? This is the first time I ever saw.
Well, when yes. So I always
well, no,
got.
No, it wasn't for me.
Well, what was your first? What's your first
My
Molly
first
Ringwald?
My first was Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone in 3D.
Wow.
That was not until much later on that I saw that. That was kind of, what is this crap? So yeah,
I
interesting.
I can't wait till it's streaming because that is made for Film Sack.
Mm. I'm pretty sure that I first remember her as a character that crossed over on multiple TV series.
Mm. Yeah.
On, you know, like sitcoms.
Yeah.
I remember this character being in different sitcoms. And I know for sure that she was in Different Strokes and
Facts of Life.
The Facts of Life. Thank you.
The Facts of Life. I don't remember.
She was the same character, Molly Parker, in both series because those are related because Mrs. Garrett was the housekeeper for Different Strokes characters.
Yeah, it's one of the more successful, I shouldn't say, it's not hugely successful, but a successful spinoff. It did okay on its own and became its own thing, kind of Frasier-like in that regard. But yeah, she would show up on Different Strokes in a crossover capacity. mm-hmm. the same way that occasionally Willis and freaking Arnold would show up in the other one. So there was all that going on.
I never realized there was any other crossover between those shows than Mrs. Garrett.
Right. Like, right.
I didn't realize that they had the Benson thing where, you know,
her former boss showed up at the school. It was very loose.
Silver Spoons was also a spinoff of Different Strokes, wasn't it?
Right, right.
Yeah.
It was just because Ricky Schroeder was friends with...
he was a rich friend of Arnold's or something.
He was a rich friend of Arnold's, yeah.
Yeah, went off and did his own damn thing.
And you know what? Television never quite figured out how much we love... parading characters through shows that they don't naturally belong in. Like if television had figured that out, Night Court would have been nothing but a parade of people from other shows. Anyway,
how cool would that have been, right?
Yeah, right.
Like the Love Boat of court comedy.
I would have been into that. So now the thing is, you ended up seeing a lot of people that would go on to become famous in Night Court, but they hadn't hit it yet. So when you see, you know, people like Data show up and you're like, oh, look, it's Data. But there's no Data yet. He's just an actor you don't know yet.
Imagine if Data and Geordi in character in a crossover episode. That would have been amazing. But anyway, listen, I thought that I watched 16 Candles as a teenager, not when it came out, but like later when it would have been a little closer to age interest for me.
Yeah.
And I thought... that I watched it and thought of Molly Ringwald as this person I'd seen before and all this stuff. So then sitting and watching it with you guys, I'm like, oh, I know exactly what's going to happen. Turns out, I don't think I've actually seen the movie.
You might be thinking of Pretty in Pink, dude, because that's what I did.
Happens to me every time.
I was like, for starters, I was really, really impressed with what a good director John Hughes is. Mm-hmm. The performance he gets out of actual 16-year-olds is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like the scene where Molly Ringwald and Anthony Michael Hall are sitting in the hulk of a busted car in a shop and just interacting is remarkable. And, you know, like you want to call them pros even as teenagers, and they were. But John Hughes was also a massive pro in that moment. He got these great, great performances out of people. Mm-hmm. At the same time, he's working from a script that is garbage.
And
the whole time I'm like thinking, I'm expecting such a better movie. Mm. And I actually had it in my head that this was a thing where everyone was playing a trick on her, and at the end of the day there's a huge party for her. And also that it was a single day, a day in the life movie, and it's not. Right. It's actually a kids party movie with the morning after. Mm. And that I didn't know at all.
It's still like 48 hours of
in a very short time frame. And also you can't totally forgive him as a director without acknowledging he wrote the piece of crap that he's directing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. Like, he wrote it, so he understands it really, really well, and he gets these great performances. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, what are you thinking? Like, I didn't know. I honestly didn't know until today that Long Duck Dong is a freaking travesty of film. Like, it should have been considered insane and horrible at the time. I don't know how it wasn't.
Well, I mean, it kind of... all right, here's my take on this. I think this is, in retrospect, having seen everything he's ever done and thinking that John Hughes is an incredibly important director in my generation, you know, I just have no doubt about that. And his influence continues on well into the future, and anything that's ever any good in the way that his movies are good, I think they owe something to him. So, having said that, I think now, after seeing all this stuff recently, it might be the weakest of the movies. And I don't know if that's because he started with it, this is his first direction job, or if it's just that this aims more in the Porky's direction and less to the more genuine direction I think things like Breakfast Club aim. I don't know exactly. I don't really have a great answer for it. It's just to say I don't think it holds up as well as it does, and I don't think it's just because there's some stuff in it like Long Duck Dong or others or other aspects that are, you know, not cool in today's political climate.
Date rapey.
I want to dig a tiny bit into, and I know this is not, we don't have forever, but I just want to dig a tiny bit into the Ames and the Porky's direction thing, because that fascinated me. I was blown away how early in the film we had an actress standing naked in a shower and people looking at her just for pure TNA, like the only reason that in the film. While at the same time, the script, John Hughes is trying really, really hard to have this be a character study. We see that naked woman through the eyes of the main character and how she is, you know, herself, like, embarrassed and still interested and so on. And like, you can't help, even at that point, like, where she goes to her home and her grandparents are there and they are so cringy. You're like, this is funny, sure, this could be like Porky's, but no, actually, I'm taking the empathetic route here, and I'm really feeling for her. Like, you can tell when they go to try to hug her, and she doesn't want to hug her grandparents, you can tell that's the point of that scene. The point isn't just to make you laugh, but to have you feel something about the character.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree 100%, and I think that's indicative of most of his work, and so there's definitely John Hughes fingerprints all over this thing in those ways. But I think there's a lot of filler that is just cheap, easy target stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, here's a party, tons of teenagers. It's a mess. The dad's rich. Here's the car. He's going to mess that car up. In fact, you see a lot of these themes in other movies that would come later, like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, like Some Kind of Wonderful. Or am I thinking of the wrong one?
Pink?
Or, no, the one
Breakfast,
where...
Breakfast Club?
No, the one where Redhead, where Mask what's that called?
That is Some Kind of Wonderful.
Some Kind of Wonderful, yeah. Eric Stoltz, that's who I meant. I always say Mask because I can't remember his name.
The only thing you think of is, you know, Mask, look at him,
Mask,
look at him.
Half-breed or...
Right. I never know what to call him. But yeah, like, those things would show up later in his own stories. And I have to tell you, it's kind of a weird thing because I watched in the exact same 24-hour period, I watched Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and then this.
Oh, Thanksgiving, the best Thanksgiving movie.
And maybe the
best, only Thanksgiving movie.
It's the only Thanksgiving movie, but it's also the best Thanksgiving movie, but not just because it's the only. It's just such a great movie, and it holds up every time you watch it. It's fantastic, but it's very different than this. But still John Hughes, written and directed, blah, blah, blah. I think it may be his best work because, again, what he does is he milks out of farcical situations, real human connection and emotion, and he does it better than anybody from that era.
It's an amazing thing he does. I am glad we addressed the dong in the room. We got that out early. We got that out real early.
Yeah.
That's one thing that John Hughes does is he brings an honesty to his characters, because it is, even if it means that we could almost hate them, we feel like they are being absolutely honest. And I think that's the only redeemable thing about his characters is their honesty. Mm. Because otherwise, they're horrible people. Mm. Horrible.
Right.
Just about everybody in this movie is worthy of loathe. Mm. But for some reason, it can't be their actions. It has to be their honesty.
But it's a thing that he didn't really master until later movies. Because this time, with this one, the characters that are likable and feel real are Molly Ringwald's character and Anthony Michael Hall's character, even though he's still kind of a caricature. But the two nerds with the
helmet
jock
on.
Straps on their head. I mean, even
headgear, always
headgear. Yeah. Well, even John Cusack and the other guy, who will forever be known as the other guy.
Yeah,
right. Wallflowers.
Caricatures. The boy that she likes is just the most boring drip ever, and there's no real character development there. So it's like he's figured out how to make two characters, how to make the two main characters feel real, but hasn't figured out how to make all the other characters.
Why are we pulling for, I mean, I tried to figure it out, I'm like, why are we actually pulling for Molly Ringwald to do anything here? Because there's no clear-cut reason why I should pull for her, other than she is just being an absolute honest representation of what a 16-year-old really is.
Yeah,
I also want to push back against that. I actually think that Hughes really, really likes and cares about this character, and I came through for me. It really like set with me that she is a normal, complicated, person with an inner life and agency and all this other stuff. Like it was kind of remarkable in that way, because my favorite John Hughes film is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I will always love it. The characters are all caricatures.
Yeah.
And I'm a little afraid to revisit that film because they really are caricatures. Like no one at that age has ever been as successful and brilliant as Ferris Bueller. He's written that way and it's great. But this is like the opposite of that. No one in this film is really that successful, except the hunk's parents, apparently, who have like both a Porsche and a Rolls Royce in the garage. Anyway, I really felt like that. Like
was that the girl's parents or the boy? Was it the hunky boy or the girl?
I think it was the hunky boy because
it was his dad's car.
He was freely, exactly, ready to give the Rolls Royce to Anthony Michael Hall.
That guy's gonna be pissed
for whatever reason. There's so little knowledge about this character.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong, but I will say this, Randy. I didn't mean to interrupt you, so I want to come back to you, but I just want to say about that guy, just to give him a little defense. I actually think I'm a little surprised he didn't become kind of a huge star. He stopped doing things after, like, pretty quick here. I got to find the dates.
Yeah, Wild Hearts is the last thing I have listed for him. We're talking about Michael Schoeffling?
Schoeffling, I think you say his name. Yeah, Schoeffling? He stopped in 1991.
Yeah, I think the best trivia about the whole movie is that he somehow beat out Viggo Mortensen for that part.
Right.
And I was just thinking, like, the whole film, I'm just like, just imagine who else you basically beat out if you're beating out Viggo Mortensen. Like, Matt Dillon could have played this role.
Matt Dillon would have been perfect. Yeah. In my mind, it actually was Matt Dillon.
He kind of looks a little bit like Matt Dillon.
Right.
Yeah.
I think he's a fine pick, but I agree he's written pretty shallow. I mean, he's not.
Oh, for sure.
In terms of his ability to do whatever he had to do, he was fine. But I don't think he.
See no reason for Samantha to be attracted to him other than he is a good looking guy.
Yeah.
He happened to be sitting there when she was writing herself porn. That's all there is to it. Right. He happened to be. And that's I'm okay with that. Like that doesn't blow my mind. I'm not okay with the whole film going by and then he gets the girl in the end. By the way, he dumps the prom queen and immediately gets the girl the next day. Like that's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty.
But that's the part that bugs me.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was some quick turnaround for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The character exploration of him would be really weird because he's broken. He has some major issues. It would take a whole movie.
Yeah, I mean, do we even know if he has more, if he has any attraction towards Samantha other than the fact that he read the note that said that she wants to have sex with him?
He wanted to be revered, to be looked at in a certain way. He wasn't getting that from the prom queen. He just felt like, because she was always threatening stuff like, oh, you're lucky to even be with me.
Right, yeah.
And, so he was very much knocked off his pedestal, and he wanted to be on a pedestal, and it's a very shallow thing he wants, it works out for him in the end, right?
Well, it does, and that's the only bummer, because as they're kissing over the cake, the iconic scene of that, all I could think of is like, dude, I'll give you like 6 months.
Right, exactly.
Right, exactly. Because all you got is looks, man, and really.
And money.
Glass table, that is not safe.
No.
Sitting on a glass table like
hell
that.
Hell no, it's not.
I think it's important to say, though, this is a film for teenagers, about teenagers, starring teenagers. Yeah. When I watch the wedding sequence in this film now, I'm just like, this is a tragedy that should be depicted as such. And I'm like, but like looking at it from the eyes of a 16-year-old Randy, I would have thought it was hysterical. Yeah. So I totally get why it's depicted as such. And I just it's not for me anymore.
That's what I feel like is the honesty about it, is because he was able to tap into a certain age group and just really understand it. Because when I remember when seeing this movie back in the day, I felt like almost any John Hughes films, I really felt like he got it. I mean, even though I didn't always fit into the stereotypes he was portraying, I definitely always knew somebody who it just seems so true about.
That's one of his strengths, especially when we were in that age range, especially in my case, because I feel like I grew up literally with the ages of the kids as the movies would come out were my age. When Breakfast Club came out, that's my peer group. Like I'm 16, I'm 15, 16 that year. Those are the kids. So to me, that stuff always felt really genuine. And it just happened to be at the time, all the music and the style and clothes and everything also matched. But That right. stuff lives on. My kids relate to it in a way that I, in the same way I did. They just, they don't, it doesn't, you don't need to have lived in the 80s to get who these kids are and why they're, you know, why they feel real and everything. But this movie, I don't think he'd quite figured it out. This was like a weird mix of like a little bit of Christmas Vacation, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mostly the grandparents and the family dynamic and all of that. So a little bit of that, a little bit of Home Alone, stick a little Porky's in there. Mix it up.
A little Porky's in there.
Yeah, mix
I'm sorry.
It up with,
it makes me laugh.
Mix it up with a very realized central character. I agree with Randy about how she's created, treated, and performed. I think she's actually really good. And that's the movie you get, and it's fine. It's 100% fine. There are some people online who are like, you guys are going to pull all the fun out of it because today's political climate. Oh, you're going to talk about all the racist stuff and this and that. You know how many movies we've seen from the 80s or otherwise that are just full of this stuff? We're not going to spend that much time on it. We know. The decade had a lot of insensitivities. We get it. It's fine. The stuff I'd rather focus on is, was the overarching stuff done well? Was it, you know, was this indicative of what we get in the future? And I just think his better films were definitely ahead of him, not
for sure. This was a good one for him to get his feet wet and kind of start developing the Hughesisms that he'd use later on, like all adults are idiots. Even the dad and the mom, when they finally realized that they'd forgotten Samantha's birthday, they pretty much have just that flash of non-idiocy. But again, once they're done with that, all the adults go back to being the same, really the same shade of idiot. It's not even kinds of idiots.
Right.
That was an enormous letdown to me, and not because the film wants it to be. Like the film could have wanted you to be let down and her to be let down and her parents to be let down. But instead it was like, wait, what is this movie about? Like the dad comes down. I'm sorry. I forgot. Happy birthday. Okay. I forgive you. We're all right. Wait, what's this movie about? Is it really just about the geek and the prom queen thinking they had sex when they didn't? I mean, really? Like, oh no, what? We had such a great plot going and the movie just drops it with dad realizing and being forgiven.
Emotionally, this movie, John Hughes is really good at this. Emotionally, this movie, as our family lives go along, we have roller coasters of tension. The tension gets tight in our families, and you know, something comical happens, and then the tension loosens up. And so that's what he's really good at. He's really good at bringing you in during the moment when the tension is the highest, and he usually does it in a montage in the beginning of the movie, and he brings that tension to such a degree. But it is a slice of life because after the 48 hours, after the highest point of this tension, it's relieved, and that's the real ending that he puts to his movie.
Are you guys bummed out that the 32 Candles movie was canceled? That was a real thing that was going to happen.
There was a sequel planned.
Yeah, they were doing it. And this would have been like what, 03 or 04, something like that.
Right,
And it would have been her coming back and most of the cast reprising their roles. And it would have been, hey, what's life like now that she's 32, married, kids, teenagers of her own, potentially, this sort of stuff. And she was like excited about it. There's all sorts of like interviews where she's like, yeah, we're totally pumped for this. And then it just didn't happen. And, you know, I think Hughes was dead by then, I think.
No, right. He didn't want to do it because he was dead. Yeah, it was just like, no, thanks. Actually, I think this was 2005.
Over my dead body, you're going to make this.
I think it was 2005 or so when they were
maybe
in
05,
at that.
Yeah.
I think he was still alive.
Was he? Okay. I could have gone for it, I think, if he'd have been involved. I think I would have been cool with it. But that's a hard thing to do, you know, those years later.
I cannot say that I'm disappointed that that didn't happen because I can't imagine it would be anything beyond a, hey, look at Anthony Michael Hall. Doesn't he look different now? And hey, look at the prom queen and what happened to her? And she's got 18 kids now or something.
Yeah. They already had that movie, 13 going on 30. That would have been a great, you know, little fast forward skip for Molly Ringwald. So she's still playing that 16-year-old who is kind of selfish.
Yeah,
but
that's kind of the
body.
Movie, isn't it? Yeah, that's basically, we did get the sequel, everybody. It had Alias in it. What's her name?
Had Alias in it.
Yeah, she was in it.
Jennifer Garner.
Mm-hmm.
Elektra. She'll always be Elektra to me.
Yeah, sure she will.
Sydney Bristow. Sorry, I can forget Elektra and let her be Sydney Bristow.
There's a story. Some of the trivia in here is pretty nuts. There's this bit about Anthony Michael Hall and Molly Ringwald initially did not like each other at all. Apparently they fought on set. were just annoyed with each other. Says here,
as every 15-year-old would be.
Of course. Says here, John Hughes took them to a record store and they bonded after they found out they liked the same music. One of the groups that they liked together was the Rave Ups. Ibbitt, any comments on who the Rave Ups might be?
They're for me, just kind of one of those blend into the background, British Invasion, New Wave bands, kind of all came out at the same time as like the Buzzcocks and the Haircut 100. Well, maybe not Haircut 100. I mean, they've got them on the brain because there's a Haircut 100 song in 16 Candles. Yeah. But kind of in the post-punk New Wave stuff, the harder edge bands like the Rave Ups and the Buzzcocks and Joy Division kind of thing.
Dunaway just wanted to hear you say Buzzcocks twice. He wanted to hear it twice.
Right, Buzzcocks. That really tickled me. I loved it.
Yeah.
As you guessed, you'll know what I laughed at during 16 Candles.
What?
All the stupid juvenile humor.
Oh, yeah, of course you did. I mean, there's a ton of it, too. And the brother, I just want to punt kick the brother across the street every time he came on screen.
The little brother was the only character I really identified with in the film. Like, I was the little brother with the headphones and the snark. It's just that this film made me want a little bit, tiny bit more of him, and he's not. He's just the mm-hmm. fat kid who laughs at certain moments.
Mm-hmm.
Where were we at in the precocious little brother trope time period? Right. Was this early on in the precocious little brother trope?
I think we're right in the thick of it. I feel like we were right there, man. In 84, 85, that was your peak.
By the way, that's the kid that Meryl Streep and Dustin Hoffman fight over in Kramer versus Kramer.
He's the boy that's running down the hall when you get a naked lady comes up and he has to stand there and see naked lady in that movie. Do you remember that? Where she's like covering herself with her hands.
I want to drive through some more trivia before we get to quotes.
Sure.
The casting of this film is just fascinating. Like, in addition to Schofield beating out Viggo Mortensen, I love that they found Gary Watanabe in Utah, and he sounded like a white guy from Utah.
Yeah,
and
Ogden.
They kept the whole film. They kept sort of cracking the whip, asking him to sound as stereotypically Asian as he could. Like, that just blows my mind.
Yeah, that dude's from Ogden, Utah, which is north of me, and no one likes Ogden. And it's hilarious he came out of there. By the way, he's 62 now. Just put everyone in perspective as to the time frame of this movie. That actor is now 62 freaking years old.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He was 29. He was 29 when they were making the film. They portraying him as like a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the only few characters that is genuinely likable in this movie. And I know a lot of people didn't like his portrayal, but I think the stereotype that was most offensive was just in his introduction. After that, I felt like I was laughing with him more often and feeling like he was elevated above
Americans. Minus the gong sounds every time he'd show up. Like, oh, he's fish out of water. He's never drunk like this. This is new to him. Like, that stuff was working for me fine.
Yeah, yeah,
right. That was all right. It's just the gong sound and the initial part and anytime any of the old people were just acting like, ugh, he's the strange
people
alien.
Were the worst.
Yeah,
Chinaman.
Your Chinaman's out on the yard or whatever that guy said at one point. I'm like, dude, really?
The other little bit of trivia from casting that I just love that I will always retain about this movie is that Hughes was seeing a lot of people for the geek, for Farmer Ted, the character.
Yeah, yeah.
And they all came in and looked at the pages they got for the character. And then did their auditions with, with heavy rimmed glasses on and a slide ruler in a pocket. And Anthony Michael Hall came in and auditioned the geek as a wannabe cad who had none of the trappings of nerddom.
Mm-hmm.
And John Hughes loved it. And I love that because it's just that thing about, I'm talking about at 16 or 15 or however old he was when he was auditioning, he already knew.
Right.
He had these insights into how you act, and I love that little story. Like,
I agree, Hughes not a cartoon yet. He's just as I remember feeling like him at some point, trying to kind of step out of your zone, be cooler than you are, and act like it. And people kind of, you just know people can see through it, and whether they can or can't, it's not really the important thing. I think he embodies this role. He's like perfect casting.
Yeah, like, John Cusack apparently wanted the role and didn't get it. What a weird trajectory.
Good.
Yeah,
I think that's a good choice. I mean, I think John Cusack did did so well after this that he shouldn't be at all disappointed that he missed out on this,
right,
because it would have been a wrong direction for the movie and a wrong direction for him as well.
Yeah, it'd be the one regret in his career he would have. It's like, oh yeah.
It does say Jim Carrey auditioned for the role of Ted the Geek. I think that would probably be on the side of the way overly exaggerated nerd sort of thing, and they wouldn't have found that the thing they were looking for. Of course, this is also before Jim Carrey was a name you would know, but
and he was playing a little more serious at this point in time. His earlier stuff. Yeah, he played a little straight. When he first started acting, he toned down his comedic.
I think that's later though. That's work. Like early 90s, isn't it? Because he was doing stand up in 86, 87.
No, I mean not intentionally. I don't think he had the confidence to play it at that point in time. Because his first movie, which was around let's see, that should have been Once Bitten around 1985, been the next year. If you've ever seen Once Bitten,
no,
he doesn't play it over the top. It's pretty serious. There's a couple of pratfalls, but for the most part, he's kind of laid back.
Oh yeah, that Lauren Hutton thing
was the Earth Girls Are Easy,
right? In the Deadpool, he didn't really start acting like a lunatic probably until, I don't know, the Ace Ventura was the first time I really saw him just act like a lunatic in movies.
Well, yeah, his lunatic bit,
his TV stuff,
In Living Color was really where that stuff came out. But yeah, you're right,
because I don't think they had the confidence. I don't think they had the confidence. You're right. I don't think they had the confidence to let him play himself in movies.
Oh, hell no. No, they weren't going to let him. Point. And I don't know how he would have auditioned for this role, but I just think that they made the right choice. Hughes is already familiar and worked with Anthony Michael Hall with the first vacation movie. He was the very first.
Is that your favorite one?
Of all of the Rusties?
Yeah. All the Rusties? Galecki's my favorite.
You know what? It's really, really. I don't think Galecki drives me kind of nuts, actually, in that.
Oh, I gotta go with Johnny Galecki.
I don't know, dude. Yeah. He's all right.
No, I think Anthony Michael Hall might be my favorite.
Yeah, I think he's either my favorite, or I really do like Papa Giorgio from the Vegas one.
I agree, but I just go with Johnny Galecki because he brings the best out in Juliette Lewis in Christmas Vacation. Right. It's amazing.
It's a good comp. She's my favorite. What's the daughter's name?
Audrey.
Audrey. She's my favorite Audrey, I think.
Yeah. Easily the best Audrey.
Yeah. It's not so much that it's how she plays it, it's how they portray Audrey. It's just less. The Audreys and the other ones are just kind of bubbly.
I like how
Galecki
is so defeated. I think that fits in with how you would have to
I like
be
that you call him
Chevy
Glicky.
Chase was your,
you call him Glicky. Glicky, yeah. Just Glicky, I think, is
what you call him. Little Glicky.
There's nothing weirder to me than the fact that Vegas Vacation is over 20 years old. Yeah. I can't believe that movie's been out that long. It is probably the most complete of the vacation films. I know that's crazy to say, but like, it's a film that actually tells the whole story. Mm-hmm. And goes from beginning to end, whereas the one I watch every year, Christmas Vacation, is a bunch of vignettes, right?
It's a collection of skits.
Yeah. Which is very John Hughes. Everything else feels less John Hughes, but
I mean, I think European Vacation, which featured the worst of the Audreys, if you ask
and
me.
The worst of the Rusties, by the way. They're worst
the
of the Rusties
worst of
by
the
far.
Rusties, yeah.
That's a bad movie.
I think we'd all agree it's probably the worst of the vacations, really.
No question. Is there any fight out there in the world that doesn't think that? I mean, I don't know about that new remake, Rusty's old thing.
That wasn't too bad. The sequel. New one?
I never saw it, so I have no idea.
I call it a sequel because it's
still in the same timeline. Yeah,
same timeline.
Yeah, we have different people, but it's the same story.
Well, yeah, and Chevy Chase is in it for a minute.
Beverly D'Angelo too.
Yeah, they're there for like a hot second just to say, "Hey, we're the grandparents. See you later." And
we approve. Go ahead.
We approve. Go away.
You can make this.
It says here.
And by the way,
oh yeah, go ahead.
By the way, I just want to finish that topic by noting that Ethan Embry is amazing in Grace and Frankie. If you haven't been watching
Grace and
Frankie,
he's really
it's
good
one of those
in
things.
That.
It's like, and they're actually getting a fifth season. Can you believe there have been five seasons of that show?
I think part of that is they've got two very old, incredibly comedic and wonderful actresses in that show that could die
who are
any
willing
second.
To work for a reasonable amount of money.
Yeah, and they could die any second. So keep the season. They just go they go back to back, man. They don't even, there's no season off. They just make them so they can have five within like 2 years, which is basically what they've done. But anyway, Laura Dern and Robin Wright both auditioned for the role of Samantha Baker. I could totally see those two in that role. I'm not saying it'd be
like
great.
She would have been Robin Wright. I don't know. Like, I can't not have her debut as the Princess Bride. I have to have that.
Yeah. I saw her in some, she was in some soap opera before Princess Bride, and I remember that throwing me a little bit because I'd seen some of that somehow, which is not even a thing I watched, so I don't know how I saw it, but. But yeah, so for me, I don't know. She would have been fine, but I could totally see Laura Dern at this age doing this, like being kind of awkward, but also kind of pretty and sort of turning 16 and being pissed no one remembered and blah, blah, blah. That would all probably work. Mm-hmm. And then don't forget Joan Cusack and Anthony Michael Hall. They didn't know it at the time, but they would be in the infamous 1985 to 1986 season of Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I was wondering where you're going with that. I forgot. Yeah, infamous.
Yeah, the season that no one remembers, that everyone hates, that was not, it was Ebersol or whoever.
It was Ebersol. Yeah, it was, and you also had Randy Quaid in that season. You had Robert Downey Jr.
Yep. It was just the weirdest thing.
Another John Hughes, weird science actor.
But what a weird thing that was. And I remember watching it. The only thing I remember is Randy Quaid eating tinfoil in a sketch. That's all I remember is he was eating tinfoil.
What grossed Scott out the most in that season of Saturday Night Live?
That was such a weird thing, and then that's all I watched. I think everybody turned that season off. That was like
you think it tasted like cilantro? Because I know a lot of people who eat cilantro think it tastes like tinfoil.
Tinfoil, yeah, probably.
And that whole season would be a great trivia thing for us to do sometime.
Oh gosh, Battle Royale would kill me on that one because I kind of resented it. I was pissed that it existed. Because it just seemed like the wrong... It's like, wait, these are all actors from movies. What are you doing?
Right. Yeah, it was the first time they'd done something where it wasn't like a whole bunch of unknowns who came up through the standard ranks of the Second City comedy troupe and the Upright Citizens Brigade and things like that. It was like, all right, these guys are all established. Let's just pull them in and see how it goes.
Well, here's my least favorite trivia because I think it sounds stupid. And I don't know who would say these words, but here you go. Molly Ringwald got to decorate Samantha's bedroom with items from her own dwelling. What is that? Why do you say it that
dwelling?
Way? Yeah. Why do you just say she brought stuff from home that she liked? From you don't have to say
from her cave.
Dwelling.
From
her. I was telling Tina that we were watching that. I said, I want that Squeeze poster. I want that Squeeze singles poster that she's got next to her bed.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All that. Probably there's hers. Actually a bunch of stuff in there that I wouldn't. Mind.
When she goes in her brother's room, there's a poster on the inside of the door that I think every boy had, and I'm forgetting who the model is, but it's a famous woman in a pink bikini.
Yeah,
oh, I think Cheryl Teague.
Cheryl Teague, that's
Cheryl
it. Teague's? Yeah,
that's right. I saw that. There's a glimpse of that, and I'm like, oh wow, set decorators really got the accuracy here.
Yeah, if you went to Spencer's, it was in one of those big. fanning poster things that you go and she was always right there, man. Always
gotta flip through that quick when mom shows up.
Yep. While we're talking about trivia, now is a good time for us to really quickly shift gears and pull a listener from the audience. Well, not really pull a listener, we're just gonna name a listener from the audience, and they're gonna get some prizes based on how well you guys know 2018.
Oh, no. Okay, hold on then. Before we do that, people at home listening to Film Sack, I'm going to pause you right now. We'll be back in a second. Oh, yeah, 16 Candles, back in progress. So back to
it. It was fun.
You guys want to figure out what grossed me out? Because I got one. What grossed Scott out?
Yeah, I'm trying to rewind, thinking things that gross Scott out.
I'll give you a hint so it helps you narrow it down.
Place at the party.
I'll give you a hint so you know what, it gives you some context. It's a thing that is actually portrayed on screen, not something implied. So if that helps at all.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Is it a boy sniffing some panties? Because that's freaking gross.
No, because
did anyone sniff them?
No one sniffed them, I don't think. Did they?
They just held them up in the bathroom.
Yeah. That was off screen. Yeah, we was talking
about it. Randy saw more there than that actually happened. Yeah.
Maybe that's gross and I'm into it. I don't know.
There was a lot of anytime there's a bathroom sitting, there's a lot of there's just so many gross moments in this movie.
It's an easy one for me.
People being way too accepting of each other's.
Oh, what about? I mean, this is a simple joke and it didn't land at all. But what about just like being told, "Don't go in that bathroom. It smells like shit. There are shit particles in the air," and you just go in. Like yeah, that was just a moment like who does that? Yeah, who goes in?
It was pretty gross. It was pretty gross, everyone. But that's definitely not it. Although it's the one line I remember from the movie, actually, talking about how Grandpa polluted the bathroom in there.
And oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know why I remember that, but that's not the gross moment. That's not it.
Was it something that happened during the dinner with the Bohunk?
Nope. I'll give you a hint. It happened during the dance and at the school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm a little surprised. Oh,
was it Joan Cusack wiping her face with the skirt of the?
Well, you're missing. You're in the zone, but you got the wrong thing that I think is gross. What's gross is putting your entire mouth over the top of a freaking drinking fountain spout.
Oh yeah, that was pretty bad.
That's horrible.
Oh, that should have
she did that too.
Yeah, totally.
In a high school freaking drinking fountain with your mouth just like filleting that thing, you're gonna go home with like 12 diseases. It's disgusting. Oh my gosh, that grossed me out. All right, how about this one? Chick in the bucket. I'm even gonna play a thing for it. My pick for Chick of the Bucket is the rich, good-looking kid's dad, because my gosh, he didn't seem to care that his house had just been completely hosed and destroyed, and there's no way that happens if that dad's a real guy. So for me, he is missing in action. MIA that guy.
I can see
now,
that.
We never saw him before, so part of the rules of Chick in the Bucket is usually it's somebody we see.
Yeah, and but then not later, just his house, but who knows, you know, what kind of condition... Well, I guess we kind of saw the condition that the Rolls Royce was returned in. And
yeah, which is, again, a very Cameron-esque Ferris Bueller kind of moment. And you never meet that dad either. It's always just this menacing idea that there's somewhere there's this dad who's going to find out his Rolls Royce is destroyed and full of beer.
Oh, well, wait. I thought they were the same dad. I mean, the dad that the house that the party was in.
Yeah, that's the same dad.
It is the same dad.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm comparing him to Cameron's dad and the other movie.
Oh, gotcha.
Because they're similar.
Right. Yeah, we never see that dad either.
Yeah, you never see that guy. You never hear from him. You just always have it in the back of your head. Everyone knows what a mad dad's like. You're all dead. And John Hughes must have a thing with that because he does this in multiple films.
Mm-hmm. He does.
He loves that idea of like, oh no, I've done the thing that will piss off the person who is the most pissed off. And then they never quite fulfill it, but yeah, there's that. So there's that. I did laugh really hard at one scene that I don't remember, and I laughed super hard at. There's a scene where Billy Bird, God rest her soul, is in the kitchen with the other mother-in-law who's got a cigarette butt with the longest ash thing on it you've ever seen, and she is... chasing it with like a spatula, trying to make sure that doesn't fall off.
Yeah,
I was dying.
That was gonna be the third of my three things that this movie can't get enough of in my greeting, and I just felt like I was going too long. But there's drunk people stumbling around or inebriated people stumbling around. Movie cannot get enough of that. Movie can't get enough of girls closing things indoors, like their hair, their dresses, and the movie loves people just smoking casually. So casually that the little kid is pretending to smoke pretzels.
Yeah, he lit the pretzel. Yeah, I love that. I kept going, is he seriously? But we used to do that. That was a thing that at that age during that time I would have done.
Did we? Would we?
I did. Yeah. I did. I mean, because we still had cigarette candy. Cigarettes.
Candy cigarettes, right.
So, yeah. I mean, everything was a cigarette. Yeah, I'll smoke that. What do you got? Give me that.
That was banned.
I'm interested. Like, we have this book that we used to write, all the Tristan-isms, anything he said that was really funny. And one of the things was, you're doing very well with your crayons. And he says, yeah, I'm holding it just like a cigarette.
Oh, nice. You know,
I have nothing to back this up as evidence, but I just feel like John Hughes, I think he encouraged his actors of any age to portray themselves as they truly would at that time, because... I swear, there's no way he could have written most of this stuff to understand that or remember that much stuff. To me, it seems like I've never read anything anywhere that says John Hughes allowed, you know, the characters to do that. But it just feels like it. It feels like he says, do something that you would normally do. Just be yourself.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind a good documentary. Maybe it exists, but a good documentary about him and his filmmaking. And,
he
and
seemed like he was very secluded, you know. Didn't really contribute much to things like director's commentaries on discs. Mm-hmm.
We've
got to kind of go by there was a biography that I think a couple of the actors may have done about him called Don't You Forget About Me. I want to say Molly Ringwald and Ally Sheedy maybe were involved.
Oh, okay. Maybe I've heard of this actually. That's ringing a bell.
Yeah.
I probably should seek that stuff out because I fascinated by that guy. Now, here's a question. All the controversy around the idea of sort of casual references to date rape and this sort of thing in this movie. Mm-hmm. I have a question about that, because my understanding before this viewing and after now hasn't really changed, and that is that they don't really know. The cheerleader and the dude don't really know if anything really happened.
Yes, it wasn't like one of them was fully aware of what was going on, taking advantage of the situation. I mean, that kind of takes place before that, but you can't really call it date rape when the dude just hands over his drunk girlfriend to the geek and says, do whatever you want.
Right. And all that stuff I think is skeezy and weird. I don't want to discount it, but I guess what I'm saying is, when I came to it this time with all of the hullabaloo about it, I thought I was going to be reminded of a scene where it was very opaque that something hideous had happened. And at the end I went, I mean, like say in, remember Revenge of the Nerds? That was very rapey. Like Revenge of the Nerds, super rapey. This didn't feel this way to me. It felt like, two drunk kids don't really know what happened. I know kids in high school who were drunk and said, who knows what happened last night? And I knew for a fact nothing happened the night before. So.
Well, and that's the joke. Everyone who watches this film in the 1980s sees that sequence and says, those two people did not have sex at all, and they're just making up a fun story to share. That's it. That's the whole thing.
We've already established that 15-year-olds, like Molly Ringwald, isn't sure if she's even had sex, because this is the time when sex was very, you didn't really talk much about it. We were just now getting to the point where sex ed and being totally transparent and honest. So the fact that you know, the younger character here would not even be sure if he even had sex, I don't think was really out of the realm of possibility. Now, the girl in this situation was very much drunk. We knew she was drunk, but he was just, you know, a little tipsy.
Yeah.
So I mean, the implication, I think it all plays still, to that. Yeah. That innocence of not understanding
the implication still kind of sucks, like just tossing her around like she's an object. I don't like that, and
that was terrible.
But I don't get the overtness that everybody seems to apply to it, including, you know, Molly Ringwald recently has come out and said, I'm not too comfortable with 16 candles anymore and this
stuff. Well, of course, no person in their 40s should be comfortable with that at this point.
Yeah, but you're supposed to be the dumb adult. You're supposed to be the dumb adults in those movies now. That's what we've all become. Exactly. That we've all become the, you know, we're just worried about fitting all the grandparents in the same car. We don't notice there's a Chinese guy jumping out of a tree. We don't know.
We forget what a mystery of proper sexual behavior is when you're, you know, 13 and 14, especially back during the 80s compared to today, because we forget that as adults. It's a total mystery.
Yeah, that's true. Brian Doyle Murray sighting, by the way. Anyone see him? He was in the preacher, the marriage preacher.
No, I didn't recognize him. Of course, we recognize Zelda Rubinstein from Poltergeist.
Can we not mention her? Yeah, we got to talk about that lady.
She's also really, I really enjoyed spotting Jamie Gertz. I like her a lot.
Oh yeah, who is she? Because I saw her in the credits,
a party goer.
Okay, prom queen. So small, something small.
Well, she was the one. She wasn't the one who cut the hair, the prom queen's hair, but she was the friend of the one who cut the prom queen's hair.
Oh. Oh, right. When they were all drinking. Yeah. Okay. Well, the Brian Doyle Murray thing bugged me just because part of what makes him who he is his incredible voice and vocal uniqueness. Like, no one sounds like Brian Doyle Murray, not even his brothers. Right. And so with him not saying anything, like, didn't even say... There wasn't even part of like the wedding ceremony that he would say any words. That kind of annoyed me, because we'd get him in other Hughes things. He was in Christmas Vacation. He was that mean boss. He was in, you know, other stuff that I can't think of right now. But I didn't see him. I saw him and went, Brian Doyle Murray. Looking like he does, doing what he do here in this movie.
Yeah, totally, very much underused, for sure.
Should we, before we do clips, I wanted to get Brian Ibbett, given this is a cover-thon we're on today, I wanted to get your take on overall the music in the movie, which was a kind of a mix of, there's some new wave, there's a little Bowie in there,
there is some great, the Bowie Young Americans being in there is fantastic. The Wild Sex in the Working Class by Oingo Boingo is classic in there as well. But then there's some weird ones. When Samantha's sitting in the hallway and people are walking by after she gets embarrassed by the geek. They play Tim Finn's Growing Pains, which is like such a not an 80s style song. It just feels so weird and out of place. Right. That one jumped out at me. Haircut 100's in there. The Specials, some good ska, a lot of good ska playing at the dance, that sort of thing. It's a hit and miss. But what's funny is, because of licensing rights, the version that you saw in the theaters had a lot of different songs in the soundtrack. And I don't know if the one we watched on Netflix is the one that was released on video, which had a lot of those songs swapped out for other ones, and that's why maybe we had that weird Tim Finn song. Mm. Or if we're seeing the original with the with the other 80s music. I don't think I saw this in theaters. I think I didn't see this until it was out on video.
So yeah, I definitely did not see it in theaters.
Well, that's where the big success happened. The box office success was moderate by any definition, and then VHS sales were through the roof for this.
Yeah.
I don't know why, just kind of word of mouth or whatever. But that's where I saw it as well, is at home.
I was surprised that this version had the Billy Idol song Rebel Yell in it. Mm-hmm. I realized that was a contemporary song. It was not an anachronism to have that song in the movie, but it would have been really new and popular on the radio and surprising if it was in a movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. Also recent. It would have felt really recent in a film where this is about the year it would have been a hot song, which is kind of rare. Right. Usually you see that later. Also,
one of the best Thompson Twins songs.
Oh,
by the
right,
way,
right.
Ever,
yeah.
So ever good. Released that If You Were Here.
So good.
Yeah.
How do we feel about the TV music theme songs to introduce certain characters?
Dragnet.
When he goes in for just the facts. Yeah. When he goes in for just the facts on the bus and that kind of stuff.
It's a little dumb. It's like the gong. It's like, all right, we get it. You got a little theme for everybody. It
feels like we had that in stuff like Ferris Bueller as well, though, didn't we? Yeah. With something with Ed Rooney. Oh, we had the when he was walking around looking for Ferris Bueller and he flips up his sunglasses, we had like a Peter Gunn moment there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And also, this is just something to say on the side here, but I remember this movie being PG and I remember watching it in the house with my family. There's no way this was PG, and there's no way my mom sat
this
there.
This would have been 84. PG-13 didn't come along until Red Dawn.
84 also, though.
Yeah. 84 also.
I think 84 is the year you got all those movies, isn't it?
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, same year.
Because, technically you only saw a brief moment of above nudity. Mm-hmm. Above the waist nudity, so it's a good question.
It could have been still PG.
One F bomb
out of nowhere too.
Yeah, that F bomb was like whoa, but there's no way that scene happened without my dad throwing a blanket on the TV or something.
Right,
like she was naked. Right. She was a naked nudie lady, and I went, this is maybe I have it wrong in my memory.
Currently in our current generation, it's rated PG. It's an interesting question. It dropped an F bomb, so that's what 84 was. We were allowed to put F bombs in
PG songs.
I mean, all the way across the board, it wouldn't kill me if my kid was 11 and he watched it. Like, it's like PG-13 for me is drawing a pretty sharp line in the sand, and it's like I definitely am concerned about like violence and gore, but at 11, I don't know if my kid would even care.
Well, he'll care, but he'll care in different reasons for different
very awkward, not awkward nudity, but very
awkward situations for sure.
Egregious and exploitative nudity. Plus, implying that, she's a 16-year-old too.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Well, I don't know if the prom queen was 16, but.
Well, she was a minor, right?
You could do that because, let's see, Brooke Shields was how old in Blue Lagoon? Wasn't too far from this.
Jennifer Jason Leigh and Phoebe Cates in Fast Times were both under 18.
Right.
Yeah, different time, man. They don't do that
different
anymore.
Times.
They don't. There's so much weird consent stuff now. Not weird, but it's just different.
It's different.
I don't know that I don't know if you're 16 and you're Phoebe Cates in 2018. And this, by the way, the actress in this thing is not the one they used in the shower scene or the underwear scene. That's a Those are both stand-ins.
Body double.
Body double.
She refused to do it. So
just like I use for film sec.
According to the trivia. Well, you have a body double, do you? Oh, that's great. Who which one are we talking to now? Which one do we got now?
You'll never know.
This is Fred Dernholway, and welcome to the show. Good to have
Fred,
you.
Fred Dernhol. Okay.
Yeah, Fred Dernhol. All right, let's get to some clips. I have a number of them here, and they begin with this one about forgetting birthdays.
I can't believe this. They f***ing forgot my birthday.
There's your F-bomb. You're one and only. Yeah. You're one and only.
That sounded very much...
peachy.
It is. And that was... that sounded like it was... It was almost sound like it was done on a soundstage. It was just so, weird.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of the overdubs
felt
very
stilted.
Yeah. Well, the movie has, I mean, it's 84. Overdub is as common as boobs in a shower, I guess.
No, I mean, boobs in a shower. It's a good point, though, because the lines, and we talked about how bad the script is, the lines that they're forced to say that no teenager that age would say, like 4 inches of bod or oily bohunk or anything like that.
That was such a weird bohunk. I have never heard that.
Never heard
so
it.
Weird and out of place.
Yeah. Right.
But it's like when, there's so many great scenes where they're delivering lines that you would expect 15 and 16 year olds to deliver.
Yep. Here's that pull up scene with a dumb line that I don't think, and these guys looked 35 in there, by the way. They did not look like high school kids, but here's what they said.
She's obviously too young to party serious.
Yeah, party serious.
Too party serious. Hold up.
Party serious.
Yeah, that's the dumbest thing.
We're seniors. We talk very adultish.
Yeah. Here's a longer version of that, by the way. I think it includes it even, but here's a big piece of it, which and a lot of the stuff you're not going to hear today, or maybe you will. I don't know. Here you go.
Maybe she's retarded. I'm being serious, okay? She looks at me like she's in love with me. Jake, she's a child. So? So what are you going to do with her? She's obviously too young to party serious. Maybe I'm interested in more than a party.
More than a party.
So much fun.
No, he's not.
Well,
look at his
Jake,
house.
Thanks for that insight into who you are.
Yeah. I'm sure that as a husband in the future, he's nothing but a vacant walk off and do something else kind of guy. I mean, think about it. That house gets completely trashed. He lives there. He just kind of goes, I'm going to this bedroom and looking at an old yearbook. Like,
I know. I'll pick up a random can of beer and start drinking it and then realize that somebody else may have drank it.
And and it's got pee in it. And then I'm going to throw it in the house that's already destroyed.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Here's nerds talking.
Score, a direct hit.
Okay, those guys should have been around longer with their jock straps on their heads. And actually, jock straps made like multiple appearances in the movie, but those two with the laser guns on the bus, that's it. That's all you got.
Anybody with headgear was instantly recognized as a nerd. I mean, if you didn't have on some kind of dental apparatus, then you would surely have on some kind of headlight. If you don't have a headlight, you'd have like some big old headphones from the 70s.
What happened to Joan Cusack?
What?
Joan Cusack just get hurt? Was that her deal?
No, she was wearing that. It was headgear, right? It was just for her mouth. Right?
Was it? Does it look like
like a neck straightener thing too? Right?
Yeah, That's what I thought it was. Yeah. But I don't know. Sorry.
If it was if there was some continuity from 16 Candles to the other Shermer, Illinois movies, would those two guys on the bus would have been the two guys from Weird Science?
Nice. Absolutely. Oh, I like it. There's a
connective
tissue.
Even though one of them was Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah. Right. I'm into it. Did you notice one kid had a Penthouse magazine on that bus? That bus.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. That bus. I did a little screen cap and he's sitting there reading it. That bus is basically my junior high bus every morning. Like straight up, that was real. That felt real.
I've
felt
never
real.
Had to ride the bus to school.
Oh, shut up, bastard!
I never did.
Ever?
Yeah. I was in
no,
all
I
the extracurricular
and rode
activities.
My bike a much longer way. I mean, it was dumb that I didn't take the bus, but it just wasn't. I don't know if it wasn't available in our area.
It wasn't dumb that you didn't take the bus. That was a look. School was hard. Bus was harder.
Yeah, Randy, what'd you do? Bus? No bus?
I didn't ride a bus to school or home any day of my life, but I was in every extracurricular activity. So I was in sports, I was in the band, and I spent more time on buses in like middle school and high school than I spent in classes.
So if you were the band and sports, would you have to like catch the football and then run really quick over to the tuba and play the thing and then run back into the field? Or how would you do that?
I was in the worst sports for bus rides, like tennis and track. Right. Oh my so you God. Can, you could just, they would just bus you all over the world. And you'd like to go to a Saturday tennis tournament, you'd have to get up at like 3 a.m. and get on a bus by 4. And,
that sounds awful. It's so a thing I would not do now ever. Oh my right? Lord. All right, here's something about Grandpa. Oh, that, yeah, this Grandpa.
Well, well.
I love this guy. The one that was never stopped laughing, needs to get a magnifying glass for her boobies and all that. In fact, here's longer Grandpa right here.
Helen, we've got an owl out here in the hall.
He's such a goof.
Borderline 1960s Batman villain character.
Yeah, totally. Play a Batman villain. That's a great comparison. Yeah, you see his mustache through his makeup, kind of guy.
Right.
Here's Grandma saying this.
Make her tinkle.
Make her tinkle. Yeah. Make her tinkle.
And then she says this.
Red, she's gotten her boobies.
Oh, I'd better go get my magnifying glass.
Freaking a-hole. What an a-hole, man, Grandpa.
People don't know anything about body shaming until you've had a grandparent like that, man. That's,
no, that's the ultimate. And she, by the way, she didn't have tiny, tiny boobs like everyone kept saying. I mean, staring.
She kept saying that she had small boobs. It's like,
you have normal boobs. You have normal boobs.
Right.
Yeah. You look great.
That was a real concern. I mean, that was a real concern during that age because your body's developing.
Yeah.
And you feel like some are a little more advanced. And you all expect, you know, your body to look like other people's. And it's just, I don't know. It's a hard and awkward time. And I think that John Hughes portrays it well.
Yes, that they were larger than the body double they used for the prom queen.
I'm guessing that is also correct. I agree. Because reality.
Not that I've given this any amount of thought until right now. But
yeah, I haven't really thought about it either, honestly.
Her body posture is someone typically of who is insecure about her boobs. You'll notice that during the whole movie, she's usually carrying books or she wears clothes that she hunches over basically and basically tries to hide herself, which is a very common issue.
Female listeners, do you like how we're doing this? Do you prefer that we talk about your breasts in a man knows all kind of way? Are you cool with it? Because that's what we're doing. We're doing that.
Is this breastplaining?
Yeah, we're breastplaining. I hope you all enjoyed it.
I'm not explaining as much as maybe I'm accepting it. Something, I don't know. It felt real. Once again, this feels.
Yeah, no, she felt everything about her felt honest. I agree.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. We'll just say that we're fascinated by those things.
Oh, yeah, no, we're very attracted to them. They're life-giving, wonderful things. I love them. Here's a racist thing you wouldn't do now, probably.
Well, I think it might be nice if you'd visit with your grandparents in Long Duck Dong.
Who?
Freaking gong. According to the actor, the Watanabe guy from Ogden, Utah, he says the gong was never talked about during filming or script level or any of that. That all came later, and he thinks people were crazy when they put it in, so...
Right.
I
wonder how much, because that is done very late in the editing, right? So I mean, I wonder how much John Hughes put into that versus
probably a lot. He probably sat there and said, "You know, it'd be great. Let's put a gong in there."
This is his first film, though, right? This is his first directorial. So how much? Once again, we need that documentary to see.
Yeah, but if you're the director, you get to pick stuff like that. Absolutely, you do.
Can I just say to you how much funnier it would have been if instead of a gong, you heard a duck quack?
Oh, that'd be good. Brian.
Whoa.
You just fixed
the movie.
And then
it would be racist as much as it would just be funny.
Yeah, and we hate it when Spielberg turned guns into radios. We hate it
Sixteen Candles Special Edition where they change the gong to a duck quack.
To a duck quack, yeah, that'd be your only change. Then fans could freak out and be pissed. Here's something about a duck's dork.
Chinaman named after a duck's dork.
There you go. There's the kid being the kid. This is a good line.
You're really acting like an asshole.
And by the way, this is the other honest thing that I thought they nailed, which is the dichotomy between oldest daughter who's moving into adulthood and the one below her is an awkward, odd thing. Right. And I experienced this firsthand with my own kids. And it felt that feels very real, just the kind of disconnect that they have. Now, the stuff later where she's all hopped up on muscle relaxants, forget about all that. I just mean kind of early where the whole world is gathering around her for her wedding and it's all about her and it's all pumped up. The other kid or kids can just feel just left in the snow. Right. It's a real, that's a real thing. And I thought they got that right.
And I like the way the character played it because she talked like her mother.
Yeah.
So she's already crossed over into adulthood. Right. And, you know, the sisters probably used to talk, you know, 101 and used to be really close. And now one is an adult and one's still a child.
Yeah, you have there's a disconnect there and it'll come back. You'll get back to it.
Yeah.
It just isn't there right now. Although that husband guy, I hate him in everything he's in ever.
Totally. By the way, that actress, Blanche Baker, who's the older sister.
Yeah.
Probably, again, the last person ever named Blanche, being she was born in 1956. She went on to play Off Glen in the first movie adaptation of The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, The Handmaid's Tale movie. Really?
Yes.
Interesting. Huh. I should check that out. I always meant to see it. I always also meant to read the book, and I never did. All right. Here's the thing I want to say in common conversation from now on. It's Anthony Michael Hall line, and I think I'm going to use it. So here you go.
Don't spaz out, okay, Weez? The situation will come online.
I'm going to start saying the situation will come online to everything.
Yeah, I like that, and I like the fact they were, the Zwallflowers were betting floppy disk.
Yep.
So
that's their currency, that dude. Their hot currency is floppy disks.
Currency of floppy disks.
Yeah,
do
very
you know
expensive.
How expensive those are?
Yeah.
How floppy they can be. Does the situation will come online? Is that something you now say when you're talking about the Jersey Shore?
No. Oh, I forgot about that. Because he may actually come online at some point. We don't want that. But I love the idea of being able to go, like, it's kind of Star Trek-y to go, hey, I'm making breakfast. Oh, your eggs look burnt. Don't worry. The situation will come online. I want to say that. I'm going to start saying it. Here's some singing in the car. Another memory I have of the movie that's very burned into my brain for some reason. This and the pooping grandpa for some reason. But I always, as soon as I heard this, it was like I'd heard it 1,000 times. Here you go.
You say it's your birthday. It's my birthday too. Don't mean that, okay?
It just, the whole thing, just, I remember it.
It's painful.
It's annoying, but I remember it.
And very, very true to the character, the age of the character. Who knows how much Johnny Hughes had to pay for just that little snippet of birthday and then Hey Jude right after that.
Oh, do you have to pay for that if they sing it? Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you can't even sing Happy Birthday.
I just wish he hadn't had a AA battery in his pocket. If it had been a D, I would have been so much happier.
That would have been pretty
good.
That
was kind of funny. Like, yeah, I felt how much you liked me. AA battery.
Yeah. Well, also, why are you carrying around a AA battery?
Why, the same reason he's using
the
floppy disks as currency.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He's the nerd. Yeah. It's just such a, I don't know. I really relate to him in a lot of ways, and it kind of makes me feel bad for myself.
When they're panning down all the row of geeks sitting against the wall before, I think the first time you see, might even be the first time you see the geek. No, because you see him on the bus. But it's the first time you see the John Cusack and the other guy characters. They're panning down all the geeks, and somebody is playing a little video game, a little handheld video game, trying to figure out what would have been around.
ColecoVision, probably. Or, Coleco football game. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it could have been, right? The Coleco football or basketball.
Mattel football.
Or Mattel, sorry, not Mattel Coleco. Football. I keep always wanting to think those are Coleco, but they're not. Mm-hmm. You're right.
That would make the most sense. Hey, you know what did gross me out, though? When, for some reason, you was talking about that. I remember the opening scene where the couple are walking into the school and they've got, you know, hands in butt pockets.
Yeah.
And the girls' pants have like two patches, and they're very close to her like butthole. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is that fart holes? I mean, is that, why are those patches?
Yeah,
at that location.
How did I miss this? Like,
those were weird.
I don't know.
Pants.
It kind of grossed me out.
They're
weird
pants.
Place to have patches.
The boyfriend was also the good looking guy with the house destroyed. While he was walking around his destroyed house, had very strange pants on. I don't know if you guys noticed. Yeah, they like this cross pleat
pants from the '84 man. Whew.
Oof, rough stuff, man.
That's right.
But anyway, I'm going to wake up.
Right. Yeah, people are pointing out that the thing in his pocket wasn't a AA battery, but it was a roll of certs that he pulls out and says, I pride myself on the fresh breath.
Why did we all assume battery just now? That's
hilarious.
I
don't know, because it looked like a battery. It looked exactly
like a
AA
like
battery.
A
that's interesting.
Yeah, good point.
That's right. And then he said a fresh breath is very is a high priority for me or whatever.
Yeah. Mandela battery. Yeah.
He looks like my old friend Craig Homer from those that very era, and it's kind of hard for me to watch it.
I can see that. I can see that.
Yeah.
Just from the name Craig Homer.
Yeah, feels Craig like Homer. He was right. The biggest nerd you'd ever know. Oh my gosh, Craig Homer.
Ever called him Craig Homer? Ever?
No,
ever
it was always no, okay. Not even once. Here's wait, what's this? No, it's just that. Okay, we can use that for other things. Never. Oh, here you go.
I've never bagged a babe.
That's a pretty good line. I never bagged a babe.
It really hurt me every time he said babe. Mm. For some reason, that just seemed like the most offensive part to me.
To say babe? Really? Not me.
Babe, just the way he said it, it just felt so ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I noticed in this movie? There wasn't, other than the guy with the penthouse on the bus. This would have been high. This would have been the kind of movie where you'd think there'd be a bunch of nerds with a bunch of stacks of dirty magazines somewhere. And no right. one barfed. That's the other thing I thought I was going to get in this movie is somebody barfing. Yeah. Nobody barfed. That surprised me.
They sure you overused the crash sound effect.
Yep.
Like any time a character went off screen and did something, there was the usual crash of a bunch of pots and pans falling down.
Yep.
Right, right.
Oh, how pissed would you be if in the workout room, Dong and the lady broke through and busted up your whole wine collection? Oh my gosh, dude.
Jeez. How flimsy mansion. Are those floors yeah. for a...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That mansion was made of paper, and it's so weird that we see $5 million worth of stuff in this mansion that just falls apart.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. A record player with a pizza on it is how I'll always think of that place. Yep.
Yeah, what between the cassette that was clearly busted and the record player that couldn't have possibly been, how are we getting like David Bowie music out
I don't
that?
Know
I don't, get
no,
that.
I don't know
what we were hearing was the receiver of the phone and a glass of water doing like a dial tone.
Nailed it.
Yeah,
for some reason
anybody had their own line during the early 80s?
We always wanted one. I wanted one, but my parents weren't gonna give me that ever.
Right.
No way.
Yeah, the sign of ultimate wealth is the phone in the car in 84.
Oh, that
yeah,
for sure.
That was wild because that's exactly what I thought. I was like, how do they have a car phone in 84?
And
I'm
like,
oh, yes, I guess it
was. The idea of a second line in your house for your teenager to jab with their friends, just unthinkable when I was growing up. Today, they all have one in their pocket. So what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are you going to say, Randy?
Certainly didn't seem like... Molly Ringwald's family was the well-off, let her have her own phone line.
Yeah. Well,
right. It was kind of, it's one of the reasons why you couldn't totally hate Molly Ringwald's character is because even though she was being a whiny little butthole in some ways, she kind of knew it was constant reminders that, you know, her life wasn't that bad.
No, she loved her dad. She had a cool dad. He was cool. Right. Everyone likes that guy, Tom Bosley's poor man's Tom Bosley. He's great. What's his name?
He's
I forget.
The dad in Breaking Away. That's always my favorite role by Tom Dooley.
Tom Dooley, that's his name. Yeah.
Tom Dooley.
Tom Dooley, if you look at him now, he's still alive, born in 1940. He's getting on. he looks like a thumb. Yeah, a little thumb.
Like I wonder if he ever got his own phone line.
Wrinkly old thumb with his own phone line, pushing it with his thumb. All right. Let's see. We got a couple more here.
Or Paul Dooley, not Tom Dooley.
Oh, it's not Tom Dooley. Paul Dooley. And when I was growing up, a Dooley was a big truck with two sets of tires in the back for each side. So four tires.
Speaking of words,
best IMDb photo, by the way, of the.
Oh yeah, cast Tom Dooley. Because look Paul at him. Dooley. Yeah, or sorry, Paul. He looks like a little frumpy thumb there, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah. He needs to play Paul Giamatti's dad in a movie.
Oh,
ooh, I could see that.
Shut
I don't care
up.
What movie. Those two need to work together.
That's a great idea. Okay, I don't remember what this is.
Or what
boy
ma-
wait, oh. He's in a movie Shit. Called Boy Makes Girl.
Yeah.
Is that like a reboot?
Of Weird Science?
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably dumb, though. Sounds dumb to me. Okay, here's the old people talking about what they want on the phone.
Or what do they want?
Sex.
Oh, Billy Bird. I miss Billy Bird.
Sex.
I picture her in heaven somewhere wearing a bra on the outside of her clothes by accident, just walking around. She's the best. Freaking loved her. Everything she ever did. She always played some kooky old grandma that was losing it.
Yeah.
What's the movie where she wore the bra on the outside? It was like another John Hughes movie. What was that? Yeah, she was the grandma that just couldn't understand. She walked around the house with her bra on the outside and made the whole family embarrassed. Right. Ah.
I just can't remember it.
She's a freaking...
It wasn't Home Alone. Was it? No, it wasn't Dennis Menace either.
No.
Home Alone? No.
Maybe we're misremembering it and it's just never happened.
No, I guarantee it happened. Yeah, I guarantee it happened. I just can't think of what it was. Anyway, she's awesome.
Maybe it's an episode of Cheers.
She lived a long time, 94 or something. She ripe old age.
Oh, was it Starman?
No, it wasn't Starman.
It was Starman.
No.
Wow, she was making movies in the 50s. Holy cow.
Yeah, been around forever.
She's probably like the hot starlet during that time, right? Mm-hmm. One Crazy Summer was
That's the one.
Ah, there you go. Yeah.
That's the one.
Did you end up having to type Billy Bird bra to find it?
No, I was scrolling through her IMDb list. That's how come I knew she did so many movies in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. I like the idea that you would have to go from the Billy Bird bra search.
Right.
Billy Bird bra.
I don't know what this is, so here's this.
Jake!
Oh, it's him with his screaming Jake when he's under the
oh,
table.
My Jake!
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, inside the painful. Inside the coffee table.
Yeah. That's some puberty still trying to work its way out. and I don't think this is his real voice. This thing I'm about to play, I think, was done in post and not by him. And so this is Anthony Michael Hall making a weird sound, and it's not him, in my opinion. Here you go. It's not him.
Overdub from some weird
other guy in some weird place. Here's Long Duck Dong.
Oh, sexy girlfriend.
So there's a thing. She's kind of the chick in the bucket. What happened to his girlfriend?
Oh yeah.
She just poofed out. She seemed good for him.
Unconscious
actually.
Somewhere in the
somewhere where she's 35 and not in high school. She never did not look like she was in high school. All right, here's Grandpa Fred stuff.
I wouldn't go in there if I were you. Grandpa Fred was in there for a half an hour. It's totally polluted.
Get dressed.
It's your nose.
It's your nose, Dad. Good luck in there. More old people saying funny stuff.
Yes, hate that rock and roll rubbish.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm afraid it's here to stay, Howie.
I'm afraid it's here to stay. Finally, Grandpa talking to Dong.
Dong, Grandpa is talking to you.
Like I said, I found myself laughing with him more than at him.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. For sure. He, you know, that guy, Watanabe, got so many roles just like that in the 80s. Gung Ho with Michael Keaton and UHF with Weird Al Yankovic.
It's his job after that. He is in Mulan. Much. He does a voice in Mulan, which is... A bit of a departure. It's good. A more respectful sort of Asian thing.
Good.
Here's Go Toward the Light, Carol Ann Lady.
Oh, my. Is everything all right? I was afraid you had an accident.
I keep forgetting she is not the person in Waxworks that says welcome to the Waxworks.
No, that's...
That's her.
That's a male. Little person.
It's a little person and it's a man. It's not her.
Yeah. Well, she was in Waxworks,
nope.
Wasn't she?
Nope.
No.
I did the same thing, Dunaway. I did the same thing.
Or maybe I'm thinking of the... What was the other one? Was it Teen Witch then?
Teen Witch, she was absolutely...
Yeah, she was in that.
Okay, so she played a similar character in that one.
I think. In Teen Witch, she was the fortune teller.
The Obi-Wan... character.
Yeah, I remember that. Oh, that movie. What a fart go in that one.
Hey, that was a good experience.
Uh-huh. Sure was. Hey, check it out, you guys. Look at this right here. Wait, hold on. Hey, it's the Film Sack Checklist. And they wonder why a generation of kids all use the R word constantly? Check. They use the word the word retarded a lot.
Oh yeah, movie. And the
F-A-G.
F word that implies homosexuality.
It's not a cigarette.
Yeah.
Don't hear that stuff anymore. All right, next one is that big family needs another bathroom. Check, double check, dude. Freaking, you're all sharing that hallway bathroom. What is going on in that house? Mm-hmm. That has jacked up. You have too many kids to have one bathroom to share. You can't. Oh, the dad standing out there with his mouthful of toothpaste can't get in.
I thought
nightmare.
There was two bathrooms, or maybe just the camera was flipped. Because one time the bathroom was represented on the left-hand side, another time it was represented on the right.
Why were they always
side.
Fighting the for this that, same thing? What? They were always fighting for that same space, though, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they were always fighting for the bathroom because there's like 12 people in that house. Yeah. So absolutely, but there was, I think there was two bathrooms supposed to be represented.
Okay.
I don't know.
Too much rice at the wedding? Check. They threw too much
rice. Rice check.
That was a lot. That was a lot of rice. All that does now, and you notice you don't go to a lot of weddings with rice being chucked anymore. No. It just brings all these like animals and vermin out, and they just.
Well, I thought it was because of pigeons.
I thought it blew up the birds. Is that a legend.
Is that true, Ibbot?
The pigeons would eat the rice and then it would mix with the liquid in their stomachs and inflate. And after they ate all that dry rice, it would kill them.
Yeah. Oh, the thickened liquid in their stomach. Yeah.
That's now, terrible. Maybe, you know, that could have been a Mikey eats. Mixes right. Coke and Pop Rocks yeah. and dies.
That's what I'm curious about because I've always heard it, but I just don't know if it's true.
It totally does. Yeah, it totally sounds fake.
I want to look it up. We'll find out right after this Trek Connection, which I got nothing from Daryl. He didn't send me Jack.
Oh, that might have been my fault. I give it to him late, and we usually record on Saturdays. I don't know if he knew we were doing Coverthon, so I did give it to him, but it wasn't until this morning.
You guys want to just...
Well, Dooley, Paul Dooley, I think, did some... Trek stuff. Wasn't he might have.
He looks
like a
Trek guy.
Wasn't he on Deep Space Nine as something?
Or TNG. Who knows?
Or next, yeah.
He right. feels like he's been on some stuff. Some of those older people maybe. But my cursory search yielded not much. I couldn't really find anything except some technical stuff.
Can't do it, Captain.
Soundtrack great. I give it an E for 80s. It's just all up in it, man.
What?
80s is
you're right. You're writing the 80s out fully?
The number 8 starts with the letter E. Okay.
Well, yeah. Otherwise, it'd be a letter. The grade would be an 8.
The letter 8 for 80s.
Yeah.
No, you could have given it an 84 out of 100.
I could have done that. You're right. 84 out of 100.
Yeah, here we go. Dooley was on Deep Space Nine, the recurring role of Enobrin Tane.
And he had weird gill face looking head appliance thing on his head.
I think so. Yeah, he was the head of the Obsidian Order and the biological father of Ilum Garak. Oh, Garak. Okay.
Hey, oh, yeah, Garak. Hey, do you remember did you, so the other night, I don't know if we've all seen it yet, but Ibbot and I have been talking about the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which we both loved.
Oh, you don't want to see
Panshot.
That.
Panshot.
It's fantastic. Panshot.
Panshot.
But my favorite thing about it, one of my favorite things about it is in the final segment, so an anthology film. There's a guy who's playing French in it, although he's an American actor. He's actually Canadian, I think. Yeah. But that guy is in a million things.
He is Saul Rubinek.
Saul Rubinek. Yeah. And in TNG, I'd totally forgotten, but he is that like intergalactic toy collector guy that finds Data and won't let him go.
Oh, yeah.
So okay. If you ever see that and then you see Buster Scruggs, it's a fun little combo there of those two guys.
He always plays... skeevy kind of oh god, you're right.
Okay, is everything fine? Okay, everything good?
Yeah. Oh, she's fine.
Okay, good.
I remember him. The thing I think of most is True Romance. He's the film producer whose penthouse gets completely destroyed with gunfire at the very end with
the magazine or a place he lives. Is it a place he lives or a magazine?
The place where he lives, the penthouse. The suite great. Where he lives.
Just somebody shot a bunch of bullets through a magazine.
Right. Yep.
That's fantastic. All right, we're going to get now to our Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. As is tradition, despite the live nature of today's show, we still begin things with Randy.
16 Candles. John Hughes's worst film includes a naked woman in a shower, drunk people hooking up, older people in their underwear trying to hug you, and long duck dong. Just like a horribly overused joke that I should really stop making every week.
No, we like it at Mibbitt's house on Saturday night. I like that stuff. You should never stop doing that.
Never stop.
Done away.
16 candles. Like 4 inches of bod. They're talking about hair volume. I can't stress that enough. Have you ever touched it? I guess so.
This is just an extension of your intro. This is amazing.
Do we ever figure out what the 4 inches of bod? I mean,
it's hair. She's talking about hair volume. Yeah, that's absolutely what she's talking
about.
Yeah, she is. That's what it was.
Talking about hair volume.
Yep, she totally was. Hair body volume. Yeah.
Yep.
Really?
My sister, I had a sister who would refer to her hair, how big she'd get her hair with her spray and stuff, as bod. I remember that. Huh. Mm-hmm. It's stupid. Don't get me wrong.
It is stupid. And no teenager abbreviates it to bod.
Not then.
Agreed. Finally, but never lastly. No, it's always lastly. Lastly, but never finally. Brian Ibbot.
I had to scramble to write this during the last set of music before FilmSack. Mm. 16 candles. You could come back in a year as a totally different person. Or in 6 years, Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh. I like it. I like what you said.
Yeah.
It It was only 6 years after this that we saw him in Edward Scissorhands looking like a completely different person.
Yeah, it really, it weirds me out because it feels like an eternity that he was this skinny nerd, but it was really just like two and a half movies or something.
It totally was. I mean, you had Breakfast Club, Weird Science, this, and then he disappeared for a little while, apparently spent all
to work
his
out.
Prestige Fitness.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Came back.
He basically went to 24-hour fitness and took advantage of the name.
Came back looking all buff. It says, I found some trivia that says that he and Molly Ringwald after this movie dated for like 4 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know how that went, but whatever. It's fine. No judgment. Do what you got to do.
It's fine. were we supposed to be judging? We'll I didn't know we were supposed to be judging.
We'll allow it. Yeah, we'll allow it. It's fine. All right. Well, that leads us directly into this. This is this list here, the alternate titles that were given to the film originally. It was originally called 16 Racist Moments. They decided to not do that. And instead, they almost went with 16 Canned Dolls. I just liked how it sounded.
Dolls.
16 Canned Dolls. Get it? Canned Dolls. Because it sounds like candles. Yeah. That's the thinking there. Also, we got some emails. One email I'm going to read. The rest, I just want to give a quick thank you to the many people that wrote in with extremely nice things to say about you all being full 400ers, people who have seen every movie, watched every movie, listened to us for every episode, and have been here since the beginning. There were way more than I expected. So it's hard to pick one, so I didn't. But I just wanted to tell you all collectively here, that's amazing, and you're all great, and that we love you more than chocolate. So thank you for your...
You're all official members of the Golden Sack Club.
That's right. The Golden Sack. We call you, you're all chodesters or whatever we want to call you for short. And I'll just say, we thank you for your service and we grieve your loss. Thoughts and prayers for you sticking with us for 400 freaking episodes of this business, but we really appreciate it. So thank you all for that. Carl from Huntsville, Alabama wrote in, says, Hey guys. Why don't you be blue? Anyway, says, love the show. Started to watch my favorite childhood with my son. Just showed him Cloak and Dagger, and he loved it.
Yeah.
I actually enjoyed it as a father watching Dabney Coleman connecting with a son of the same age as mine. Very cool. Next is Daryl, the kid with the microchip in his brain. Carl from Huntsville, Alabama. Now, did we do Cloak and Dagger, or am I thinking of something else?
We tried to do it. Yeah. We were not able to.
Nor have we done Daryl.
No, neither of those. He's basically making recommendations and then giving us some story around it. But what's the Dabney Coleman one where we did see that he's in? It's like in the it's with Ferris Bueller. It's
Project X.
Project X.
It's that's a medieval looking thing. Lady Hawk. That's it.
Oh, Lady Hawk. Right.
That's way old. That's old school.
You have to be a 400 sacker
for that one.
Was Dabney Coleman and Lady Hawk, or am I mixing those up? It's entirely possible.
I didn't think Dabney Coleman was in Lady Hawk. Who was the legal?
You're thinking of Rutger Hauer.
Rutger Hauer.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. But why would I confuse Rutger Hauer with Dabney Coleman? That's weird.
We have no idea.
It's really weird. Okay, so there's that. We also got like five emails for no reason that all seem to be asking the same question. Why does Dolph Lundgren look cooler now in his late 60s than he did when he was young and in more movies? I don't know the answer to that, but I agree with it. Yeah.
I agree, absolutely.
It makes me want to see Creed 2, and I haven't even seen Creed 1.
Yeah, you should see Creed 1. Creed 1's great.
See Creed 1.
Yeah, it's a
streaming even.
Guy what made the Black Panther there.
John Florida, 1968. War Games. That's the Dabney Coleman and Ferris Bueller.
There's the connection.
And we have seen that one.
Yes, we have. Yep. All right, well, we'll keep Daryl and Cloak and Dagger on the list, and if they show up streaming, we're all in. Maybe these are. We should check.
Okay.
Speaking of which, next film, Randy, what do we got lined up?
I have no idea.
I was about to say, Randy.
I'm just gonna.
Randy's like, no.
It's gonna be The Eyes of Laura Mars. We've been talking about this. We're gonna over to Amazon Prime to watch this.
Mm-hmm.
So, folks, get your Amazon Primes primed.
Yeah, and, prime it up.
We'll see you here.
Yep. If you don't have that, you can rent it for cheap. It's one that Randy or Ibbitt's talked about for years.
He won't shut up about it.
I've never seen it. I remember the movie poster haunting me as a kid. And it was like right around the time that I was seeing a lot of movies with my dad, but it was a lot of like E.T. and Goonies and Ghostbusters and stuff like that. And there was this Eyes of Laura Mars poster. And then when I found out it was a woman who could predict murders with her camera or something like that. I said, why have we not watched this?
Sounds great. Yeah, it's got who's looking all young in it? I forgot. Oh, Tommy Lee Jones.
Faye Dunaway looking very young.
Yeah, but is it Tommy Lee Jones in it with his open shirt?
Also,
yeah. Yeah,
it's got a mullet.
Everybody looking much younger in 1978.
Tommy Lee Thornton. I don't care, he says.
I don't care.
So anyway, that's next time. That's next time on Film Sack. So get your homework done, and we'll see you there. Before we do our final stuff here, Brian, any final shout out you want to make about this event that you're running today or anything you want to tell people?
Well, if Tina's keeping things up to date, I'm sure she is. We're already up to $1,344.
Nice.
We are well on our way, and there's still 12 hours plus left of this thing. So we're not even a quarter of the way, a third of the way through.
Yeah, I'm getting too old for this shit.
And just during this segment, I mean, it's gone up by like 60%. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's gone up quite a bit. So thank you guys.
Well done, Film Sack.
Bringing all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours.
Yeah, look at my milkshake. It brings them here. Well, fantastic. It's been great to be here and love doing this thing live. Thank you all for being here live. And for those listening at home, thank you, as always, for listening. Filmsack.com is our website. You can find us via email access at filmsack@gmail.com. And you can also find us on Twitter at FilmSack. If you'd like to leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts, that'd be great. By the way, just a reminder to you Spotify listeners, if you are down with the clown and like to get your podcast through Spotify, FilmSack is currently on there and available. So go get it. Check it out. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Donker need food.
We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Yeah, I didn't play right. Hold on.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.